Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Festive Supertone Show. The Torero Band, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, from the album Tijuana Christmas, Sound of Brass, released in 1968 on the Music for Pleasure label.
Oh yes, this is a my family vinyl. Every Christmas day, my mother used to put this on the record deck full blast and we'd all dance like fools in the living room, celebrating. So every Christmas since I was two, we would have this on Christmas Day. And that was my favourite out of all of them. So there you go. What more can I say?
Well, of course, being the Supertone show and the like, you know, yes, it's on vinyl. Yes, it's in our collection. And you'd think it was by somebody really remarkably super cool. But it's not what it is. It is what it is.
It's super cool.
But what I'm going to talk about now is the bass.
Okay.
Because actually, I don't think, because you've listened to it so much over the years, the bass played with a pick with flat wound strings, you can hear it there. And actually, it's a nice little part there. He's really got a good part going on. Or she. I suspect
wow.
It was a he, perhaps.
Do you know, all I do, though, every time I'm grinning now, and all
no,
I do is, I mean, I was dancing to that the whole way through. It's just this thing. All I do is I dance and I grin and I feel very happy. And I love the groove. I think that's it. So I've not really listened, except for I can do all the parts, you know, ba-doom, 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 when it comes to all the little xylophones and marimbas or whatever.
Yeah, there's a bit of marimba action
in there.
And they're very tricky to record marimbas,
so I can
I know.
All the air marimbas and I do every part, you see, because I've practiced.
Yep. And indeed, we were dancing around like fools there. The girls wonder what's going on. That's the two Labradors, of course, that they're in the basket.
Hairy beasts.
Yeah, under the...
Our studio hounds, Hummock, Starlight Campbell and Bobby Starlight Campbell.
Absolutely. So the theme of this show, anyway, is, of course, the festive season and everything that goes with it. And we've tried to do a bit of an alternative take on it, as we always do. But some of the stuff that we really love and stuff that is just really cool...
Do you know what, though? I don't think we try to be alternative. I think we just like different things.
Yeah.
And I think what we've tried to do is be honest with what it is we want to hear.
Yeah.
A bit selfish, but it's just like, oh, yeah, let's put that on. And some of the songs in the show have really mean so much to us, so much. And another thing is, as you start to explore other songs, it opened the door to connect to another song that we've programmed.
That's right. And like Goldfrapp the other week, got, you know, attracted a load of stick. And I don't know why, because it's a fantastic song. It's, you know, analog synths and all that. But we like a broad church of music. We like everything. There's not one sort of style of music, I don't think, that we haven't got in our collection somewhere.
They said there'll be peace on earth, but instead it just kept on raining, a veil of tears for the virgin birth. I remember one Christmas morning, a winter's light and a distant choir, and the peal of a bell and that Christmas tree smell, and eyes full of tinsel and fire. They sold me a dream of Christmas. They sold me a silent night. They told me a fairy story, till I believed in the Israelite. And I believed in Father Christmas. And I looked to the sky with excited eyes. Then I woke with a yawn in the first light of dawn. I saw him and threw his disguise. Sadness, lead your heart and let your road be clear. They said there'd be snow at Christmas. They said there'd be peace on earth. Hallelujah, Noel, be hell and hard hell. The Christmas we get, we deserve.
Greg Lake, I Believe in Father Christmas, released on 7-inch vinyl in November 1975 on the Manticore label. And that was owned by Emerson, Lake and Palmer, which, of course, he was a founding member as well. And that was written with Peter Sinfeld, from King Crimson.
And produced, co-produced as well. I can hear a bit of Keith Emerson in there. Very deep Moog synth going. I think they could have made a bit bigger of a job of the production of that. Joking, of course. Huge orchestral sections there. Incredible, you know. Because actually there was a section from the Trochia portion of Sergei Prokofiev's Lieutenant Kiji Suite. Written in 1934, so there's like a section put in there from that.
Really?
Towards the end. And it's a great song. Great song. It's my favourite Christmas song. The other one, of course, everybody plays, and I'm not even going to mention
it. No, I know.
But
is he got a beard?
Well, yeah, and very bad teeth.
Ah, okay.
And his cohort is a lovely English rose, but sadly dead now. Anyway.
Of course.
I get
you now.
But yeah, we're not going to play. But it is me, I think, in fact. And what the actual fact is that it wasn't a Christmas song. He never intended it as a Christmas song.
No.
It was a song about the commercialization of Christmas.
Yeah.
And Pete Sinful wrote the lyrics about the loss of innocence, didn't he, in childhood.
And selling stories and selling of everything. But I just don't believe that, you know. I mean, it's silly. I just don't understand how they've kind of launched it at Christmas time in November for the Christmas market, and they didn't intend it to be a Christmas song. There's something that doesn't quite tie up there, you know.
Well, I agree, and it is very Christmassy, the whole, the whole sound of it. But
yeah,
it's great recording, great production.
And he launched his solo career with this very song as well.
Yeah. It did, what, got to number two?
And do you know why he didn't get to number one?
Go on.
Because guess what? Beat him to the top position.
Go on.
Now, this is written, don't read in red underneath this, right?
Okay, go on.
Bohemian Rhapsody. And do you know what he said? He said, I got beaten by one of the greatest records ever made. I'd have really been peed off if I'd been beaten by Cliff Richard.
Well, we love Greg Lake, you know, and he was a great artist, great bass player, great acoustic guitar player.
Yeah.
I saw him in Emerson, Lake and Palmer, as I said a couple of weeks ago, last year. Last show. And great. But just one thing that he said in Mojo magazine, he said, this is Greg Lake, I find it appalling when people say it's politically incorrect to talk about Christmas. You've now got to talk about the holiday season. Christmas was a time of family warmth and love. There was a feeling of forgiveness, acceptance, and I do believe in Father Christmas.
Thank you.
Sad Songs and Waltzes by Cake from their second studio album, The Most Excellent Fashion Nugget, released on the 17th September 1996 on Capricorn Records.
I love this band. I think since we started the show, these are one of the few bands that really have got into my spirit. I mean, when we were both listening to it at the same time, obviously, and we both giggled at the same point.
Yeah, the mariachi trumpet.
But the thing is that, you know, with me and my filed acoustic bass, and we're talking about sombreros, one sombrero short, you know. I mean, it's just this mariachi trumpet thing, especially because we open with Tijuana Christmas. It's becoming a bit of a recurrent theme, darling.
It certainly is. And if you don't know about the bass, just a quick recap. Susie has this filed King John bass, which is absolutely massive.
It's huge.
And because the where the bridge is, it's like halfway in the body, and you have to take a taxi to the F or the E. If you know anything about guitar, that's right at the very top of the neck.
Yeah.
So it's a good job she's got long arms. But if she has it on a strap, because it's so deep as well, she just looks like one of these mariachi.
It is, and I just need a moustache. It is
very
funny.
Very, very funny.
But this band, they make me smile. And do you know, it's just the comedic timing as well. Is like it starts off and it's just... they're so beautiful, and when the bass comes in, and then
it's
when the drums come in, it just makes you giggle.
It is the perfect version of this track, but it wasn't written, of course, by them.
No, it was written by Willie Nelson. Now, this took me a little bit of time to track down because it's not actually ready available. This information. So he first released it as a song on the B-side to his single "Shotgun Willie," which. It's funny, can you imagine? And it was released in 1973 and produced by Jerry Wexler. It's a hit. Print it.
Great. Absolutely great. Well, you know, and the whole thing about his vocal, though, and this is John McRae, the vocalist and guitar player,
yeah.
And his guitar. Okay, we've had a few of their songs, and I always talk about this old, big old semi-acoustic thing he's got, and it sounds pretty horrible actually, but it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's perfect for Cake stuff, and it's perfect for his style, you know. But just a great song, lovely production. The rest of the album, Fashion Nugget, you should check out. It's great. So we're now going to go on to something.
Right, now this is the other thing. So we were saying, okay, we've chosen what we wanted to play, and I started researching this one song, and it led me to earlier versions that I was totally unaware of. Now, so we thought we'd play you an excerpt. Okay, well, have a listen to this. This is 1948.
Es sitzt der Verein zur Gemütlichkeit die längste Zeit beisammen heut. Die Stimmung ist voll und in dem Moment erhebt sich der Herr Präsident. Räuspert sich dann, hört mich alle an, jetzt kommt die Vereinshymne dran. Jetzt ist es still, psst, psst, ganz Mäuschen still. Gewitter schwül, es ist unheimlich still.
So that's a song by Harry Winter in 1948 called Und jetzt ist es still. And that was with the Wiener Tanzorchester. I know, I'm really good at my German. So, right, this is the second track. This was released in 1949 by Jeanette Garçon and the Jacques Ellian Orchestra, and it's in French and it's Tu es tranquille. Okay, right. Now listen to this one. In 1951, this was released by American actress Betty Hutton.
But soon again, she starts another big riot. You blow a fuse, zing, boom, the devil cuts loose, zing, boom, so what's the use? Wham, bam!
And then in 1995.
Shh.
so stare. So peaceful until you fall in love. Simple, the sky up above. Simple is caving in. Wow! You never been so nuts about a guy. You wanna love, you wanna cry. You cross your heart and hope to die till it's over, and then shh. Soon again, start another big riot. You blow a fuse, simple. The devil cuts loose, simple. So what's the use? Wow! Of falling in love.
Listening to the Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
That was Björk and It's Oh So Quiet, released on her second studio album, Post, on the 13th of June 1995 on one little Indian label in the UK and Elektra in the USA. Wow. I mean, I can't believe it. What a beautiful journey. The song's been on 44 years later from the Betty Hutton version.
Great song. And it just goes to show how eclectic Björk is. I mean, everybody talks about the album Post. It's one of my particular favourites. You know, Rolling Stone said it's one of the greatest albums of all time. You know, a lot of people have said that. And I don't think it's too overblown when they say that. I mean, you know, Big Time Sensibilities and all that. Great, 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 great songs.
I mean, it just had an impact, didn't it? It was like a vibration force that just went through the whole music world. And her video that she did for this song with Spike Jones as well. I mean, she was an absolute inspiration.
Yeah.
Absolute.
And it was recorded all over the place. I mean, it was recorded at Compass Point in the Bahamas, Fon Studios, Sheffield, Angel, Eden, Matrix, Olympic, of course, Swan Yard, Townhouse, and Whitfield Sound. Yeah,
she was all she was travelling. She was just gigging a lot and recording where she could.
Yeah, but this is a big band. I'm surprised this isn't done in London, you know, Olympics. I mean, anyway, it sounds fantastic. And the production was really odd choice of production people, wasn't it? Well, Prozit, not odd at the time, because it was really cool, you know, to have these guys involved.
Well, I think she wanted to keep, from what I've read, that Björk wanted to keep it fresh. So she worked with different collaborators, including Hooper from 808 States, Graham Massey, and Massive Attack, Tricky, who she used to date, I think, for a little while.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it was really inspirational for her. I didn't think she realised just how amazing it was going to connect and how bonkers her life was going to be, you know, because the media attention and just everybody was just so fixated on her. I think she found it really difficult to cope with all that that intrusion in her private life as well.
Well, it was incredible at the time. I remember it was a complete sensation. And I think Bjork's one of those artists, though, that really is truly original. Her voice is original. The way she thinks is original. She was talking about, we saw a little video about talking about a computer the other day, and it could have been you talking, to tell you the truth, because you've got that sort of head on you. And she was so beautiful. And, you know, you talk about Radiohead, very, very, you know, edgy band, always been right ahead and truly creative, you know, doing new things. And she's always done this as well. It's one of those artists. And she's been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
You know, and she'll come on with a mushroom on her head, or, you know, or she has some fantastic stage outfits as well, because she really creates a spectacle, which I love, you know, because people come to see her to actually, you know, to enjoy the music, but also to see her perform and engage with the audience in that visual way, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think when you do see footage of when Björk's younger, I mean, I think she thinks and she sees in pictures, and I can really relate to her because she makes perfect sense to me, and I don't think she's at all alternative in that way. I just go, oh, yeah, she's talking my language, you know. I really, really connect with her in so many ways, and I love her bravery and her courage. I think it's really important that because, you know, especially at the time, I think it was quite tough for women as well to be producing and really push forward to say something new and something different and something difficult, I think. And I know that this is the other thing as well. We've got a bit of a connection with her because when Björk wanted to record her next album in 1997, which was Homogenic, she actually went to El Cortijo Studios in Spain and recorded the album at Trevor Moraes' studio, who happened to be her tour drummer. And that very Trident console, we have that console.
We own it.
We recorded our album, Blueberry Pie.
We did.
With that console, because Björk did two of our albums with our gear.
Yeah. So isn't that incredible?
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah,
I know.
It is a real connection. I mean, and I remember a band before, because just thinking about it.
The Sugar Cubes.
Yeah, when she first came onto the thing, you know, onto the scene, the Sugar Cubes, they were so odd, and you thought, wow, what is this? What is this Icelandic thing going on?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because even her vocal accent's really unusual. Mm. I mean, when they released this her debut album, they expected like 40,000 copies to go, and I think she went into like something like 600,000. It was either this one or the debut one.
Yeah.
I mean, they just did not. They were just totally overwhelmed by this whole wave of support. Everybody just went, what? Mm. So, I mean, wow, what an amazing, beautiful woman. And I'm so happy that we've got her on the show.
Yeah, pretty
festive.
The same league as PJ Harvey, who we had on the show last week. You know, same sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, super cool woman doing really original, cool stuff. You know, fantastic.
Had to get the train from Potsdamer Platz. You never knew that I could do that. Just walking the day. Sitting in the jungle, I remember the Strasbourg. A man lost in time near Cardiff, just walking the dead. 20,000 people. Crosspers and Booker. Fingers are crossed, just in case. Walking the dead. Where are we now? Where are we now? The moment you know, you know, you know. As long as there's sun, as long as there's sun, as long as there's rain, as long as there's rain, as long as there's fire, as long as there's fire, as long as
David Bowie, Where Are We Now? From his 24th studio album, The Next Day. The single was released on iTunes on the 8th of January 2013, which was Bowie's 66th birthday, along with a video by Tony Ursula, which was posted on his website.
We love that song, don't we?
Yeah. I mean, it's very moving for us because it was... when we heard it, and we instantly ordered the vinyl. As soon as it became available, anyway. But I remember when we ordered it and we listened to the track again, we said to each other, "He's going to die."
We did.
When he says, "The moment you know, you know, you know," and God,
we
I had
crying.
A shiver through my spine, and we literally burst into tears. Honestly, between us. And it was a very moving thing for us. I mean, we love David Bowie. You know, we've probably got as many David Bowie records as anything else. That, you know, we've got virtually every. In fact, we have got everyone, I think. 24 or 25. I don't know. Is it 25, 26? I don't know. But anyway, all of them. And it's just a beautiful song, delivered beautifully. The production by Visconti is magnificent. What I like about it, compared with that 80s sound that was before with Bjork, which is quite bright and very hard sounding, this has a softness to it because it was recorded in New York on that beautiful old Neve console. Mm. And it's got something about it. It's got an atmosphere. It sounds to me like Visconti had gone back in terms of his sonic palette, back to his roots, and David Bowie was going back to his roots sonically, but ahead in terms of his musicality and his writing, you know. Incredible.
I love him. I tell you what, you know, and I know this is our festive edition, but I want to celebrate his work and his life and what he gave, because he's still very much there in our lives and very much to be discovered. And that's what I love about music and the recorded medium of music, that it's once you've recorded it and you've given it out there into the world, the relationship that other people have with your music is infinite. Infinite.
Mm.
You have no idea what sort of friendship your music builds with other people. Mm. And that's part of the inspiration that I love being a songwriter, is that when we write together, when we record something and you give it and you put it out there, you have no idea and you have to give it away. It's of you, but it doesn't belong to you in that sense, you know. It's about other people.
Yeah.
It's what how they choose, because communication is in two parts, what you intend, but also the other part is how it's received. That's what proper communication is. And music's mystical and wonderful and vibrant and celebrates life.
I think, you know, I mean, we're very eclectic, as we were talking about before, about our musical tastes. And you know, I'll listen to anything or anybody. I'll go and watch anybody put any record on. And the thing that makes me listen to it and the thing that makes me engage it is they mean it or not. And if you listen to a song and they mean it, right, regardless of how well it's played or how, you know, what it is, if they mean it, that does a lot for me, you know, because I think, well, wow, you know, they're giving something of themselves there and exposing the soul in some way. And it's a very, very difficult thing to do, being an artist, you know, and being a musician, exposing yourself. It's like being a poet, right, you know, reading their own material on stage. It's a very difficult thing to do.
But it's also a communal thing. It's when you gather around the fires that we were talking about the other week. You know, Stephen Fry's talking about this at the moment when he talks about his Greek mythology. And he's talking about bringing music back and people sitting around tables eating together. And that's really what the word and the music is. It's about music is joining everyone together. That's why I love festivals so much and live gigs. And we're on the second week of our UK tour. And for us, it's actually about going out on the road and meeting people.
didn't need anyone but me. I sincerely thought I was so complete. Look how wrong you can be. The women I've known I wouldn't let tie my shoe. They wouldn't give you the time of day. But the slit-eyed lady knocked me off my feet. God, I wasn't glad I found you. And if there was words I could tell to you, to help you on the way down the road, I couldn't quote you no Dickens, Shelley O'Keefe. 'Cause it's all been said before. Make the best out of the bad, don't laugh it off. Ha! You didn't have to come.
Sir Rod Stewart, and Every Picture Tells a Story from his third album, Every Picture Tells a Story, released in May 1971 on the Mercury record label. Now, this song, this is it. This, for me, is it.
The album is our most played album this year by a country mile. We have it on a lot. I don't know what it is about it. You know, I know it's got Maggie May on and Mandolin Wind and, you know, and they're like, these are big songs and they were hugely successful, but the whole album hangs together for me very cohesively.
Yeah.
They sound like they're having a great time. Glyn Johns was not involved in the production or engineering of this, even though it's a very Glyn Johns sound, because at the time they were the faces. Were working with Glyn Johns as producer, and I think Rod, who produced this, sort of took a lot of the tricks and sound and actually doing it. But Ronnie Lane's bass playing in this is all over the place. He doesn't go below about the eighth fret. And he's going mad. And the drums, you know, it's just great. And Ronnie Wood's, I love Ronnie Wood's guitar playing, because at the beginning it's all that. It's a really cool 12 string, yeah. And then in the middle he brings that electric in, and as soon as he starts it, it's beautiful. What a bit. And Rod's voice and the actual lyric, it's a very honest lyric. It was written by Ronnie Wood, wasn't it?
And Rod. Well, do you know what I do? Every time the track starts, I have this big grin because I'm just waiting for more to kind of fall in through the front door when they start. And every time without fail, just makes me giggle because it's just so...
And it's the first track on the album, isn't it? And it is a disaster. Now, it's not very often that we actually play a song twice. This is the 61st show, I think this is the second time we've played it twice, because we love it so much. We try and do new stuff.
A special festive edition, a holidays thing, whatever you... It's just putting a pause in life and just having a little bit of a recap, I think, as well, and playing the songs that make us smile.
Yeah.
Or mean something to us as well.
And it's just beautiful. But this period of time in Britain, you know, this is where British blues went. This was the thing after the Fleetwood Mac thing and the, you know, the early Fleetwood Mac, this is. And Led Zeppelin were happening about this time, very much so, you know, because they started in 62, albums in 69. And this is like Led Zepp 3, Led Zepp 4, you know, around about that time
right.
they were doing this. And, you know, there was an energy there and there was this British sound, you know. And this is one extreme of it. And the other extreme of it is, as I say, Led Zeppelin. And then, of course, you know, Black Sabbath and Purple and all these people. You know, there was a huge, beautiful thing coming out of the UK at this time.
There's an attitude, though, that you could really feel.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, I mean, that's the one thing that I know I like to enjoy and what inspires me is I was talking to a friend the other day about, you know, some diving into the music, like into the sea. And it's just, it's keeping it fresh and going in the music, but enjoying it, you know, because there's something that happens as well. When I put a bass on and I've got a bass guitar in my hands, I have this big grin.
Yeah, you do.
As soon as the first note starts, whether I'm tired, whether we've driven 300 miles to get to a gig, it's just a beautiful thing. And I really can, and this is why I love this song so much. See, I'm grinning now, I can hardly speak, yeah. just because it's alive and there's real people involved and it's just so, it's just home.
And it's done sort of live. I mean, McLagan on keyboards, I mean, the whole thing, you know, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I mean, I think we'll play this again next year because I just love it. I just love it. It just never dulls.
It never dulls.
The long and winding road that leads to your door will never disappear. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here. Lead me to your door. The wild and windy night that the rain washed away has left a pool of tears crying for thank you.
The Beatles, The Long and Winding Road, from their 12th and final studio album, Let It Be, released a single in May 1970, almost a month after the band had split and produced, controversially, well, overdubbed anyway, by Phil Spector at the behest of John Lennon.
But you know what? All that aside, it's a beautiful song, and I know it's one of your favourites, and I really wanted to put it on the show.
I know you chose this one. Thank you so much, because it is one of my favourite songs. I think it's a magnificent song. You know, the actual structure of it. I know there's all that choral stuff in, and you know, the big orchestra, which is very uncharacteristic of the Beatles. And I know that because I heard an outtake of the one that McCartney wanted to use, and it was like very Beatley. It was like, you know, with I think the guitar was through the Leslie speaker, that old fashioned that sort of thing, you know.
Right.
But Phil Spector didn't like it because it was John Lennon who played bass on this.
Mm-hmm.
He thought his bass playing was sloppy. And then from there, of course, being American, they used to all tight musicians, you know. And I don't know. I love the song. I love it, you know. I just love it. And it strikes a chord with me.
I think when I was just reading now, actually, that they were saying that Paul wrote the lyrics when he was up in Scotland because he had a farm up there near Campbelltown. Yep. Interesting enough,
yeah.
I like the name. And he was just, and you can be inspired when you think about the roads and the countryside, can't you, and where they take you and stuff. It's beautiful.
Of course, Campbelltown is not far from the Mull of Kintyre.
Oh no!
Yeah, well, you know, we may laugh about it and the bagpipes and everything, but you know, it was one of the most popular songs. It's incredibly popular, that, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a great tune, like it or not, cheesy.
Multi generational, I would say, actually.
Yeah, anyway, back to Let It Be, and I mean, we've read the Jeff Emmerich book, we've read lots of stuff about the Beatles and Scott and Glyn Johns and all those sort of things about what was going on and Sir George Martin's book, and so we know a lot about this time period, and it was terrible what happened at that point after such a great artist's, you know, what a great band, and it collapsed like that. But I like that album. You know, there's still tracks on that album that are really, really fabulous, this being one of them.
Well, you know, and also it's a human propensity to actually focus on the negative instead of the fact that they existed and to celebrate the work they did achieve and not sort of go, oh, yeah, at the end they just turned left. You know, it's just like, you know, yeah. Oh, yeah, and everyone goes, yeah, he turned left. You know, look at the body of work. Just enjoy the music. That's what it's there for.
Yeah.
The human beings, you know, we've all got a life to live. We've got love to love and love to... We fall in and out of love, we have adventures, and we learn to get to come to terms with our human existence and also our mortality. And I think that's what I think this is what it's all about, you know.
Well, it's at the end of our festive show. And it's been a great 12 months for the Starlet Campbell Band. It's been a great 12 months for the show. We've enjoyed doing the show. We hope, you know, everybody loves it, you know.
Thanks so much for being a part of our journey, you know. And we appreciate your support, and we love the fact, you know, your feedback and chatting to us and all the different stations now across the world that have syndicated us. So it's wonderful that we're joining up with people and sharing some inspiration, some great tunes together, you know.
Yeah, and hopefully, I'm sure 2019 is going to be a great year for the Starlet Campbell Band. It's going to be a great year for music.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great year, hopefully, for politics. And, you know, let's have a bit of peace and love out there, because I think what's happened now in the world, and this is my little speech here, is that we've got to a point now where we need to say no. We need to say no to what's happening, because there's a lot of very bad people in very bad positions, in very important positions through the world, and we need to stop and say no. But let's go on to our final track, which again is a...
Wow, you chose this one.
Yeah, this is my favourite Christmas song, Bing Crosby, Stills, and David Bowie.
Yeah.
I remember seeing it on TV. It always makes me cry. you know, it's a bit soppy, you know, a bit cheesy, you say, but Bing Crosby was like one of the greatest artists and musical performers and actors of all time in America.
Absolutely.
He's a massive. And when David Bowie did this with him, he didn't actually know who David Bowie was. Literally, he had no idea.
And you know what was really funny is that David Bowie said, and this is a perfect gift, he said he wanted to get on the show because he knew that his mum liked the show and liked Bing.
Fantastic. Well, anyway, have a lovely break, have a lovely holiday, and we'll see you in 2019.
Yeah, enjoy.
Oh, good. What kind of singing?
Well, mostly the contemporary stuff. Do you like modern music?
Oh, I think it's marvellous. Some of it really fine. But tell me, you ever listen to any of the older fellas?
Oh, yeah, sure. I like John Lennon and the other one with Harry Nilsson.
Ooh, you go back that far, huh?
Oh, yeah, I'm not as young as I look.
None of us is these days.
In fact, I've got a six-year-old son, and he really gets excited around the Christmas holiday mm-hmm. thing.
Do you go in for any of the traditional things in the boy household Christmas time?
Oh, yeah, most of them, really. Presents, tree, decorations, agents sliding down the chimney.
What?
I was just seeing if you're paying attention. Actually, our family do most of the things that other families do. We sing the same songs.
Do you?
I even have a go at White Christmas.
You do, huh?
And this one. This is my son's favourite. Do you know this one?
Oh, I do indeed. It's a lovely thing.
To see pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Our finest gifts we bring pa-rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum, rum-pa-pum-pum.
Peace on earth, can it be? Years from now, perhaps we'll see.
Our see the day
of glory.
See the day when
live in peace away.
So
peace on earth
when we come. Every child must be made. Every child must be made to care enough for his fellow man to give all the love that he can.
I pray my wish will come true.
It's
for my child and your child too.
He'll see the day
of glory.
I play my day for him
when men of good will live in peace, live in peace again. Peace on earth. Can it be? Can it be?
It's a pretty thing, isn't it? I'm sure glad you came by to work out on the piano today. I enjoyed it.